Firstly, I want to thank Ronan and Sylvia for opening up their home. It's big zechus for us in the Kila to have them join us. It didn't take much time for them to really integrate into the Kila. Ronan participating in many of the shirim. I haven't seen him in the morning. We're going to work on that. I imagine things are a little crazy with the baby. That might be the excuse still. And at the night shirim, and on the security team. So it didn't take much time for him to really integrate, even though it's been only, I think, around a year, right?
Yeah.
A year. And he really became part of the Kila. And it's a tremendous zechus for us to, he had this dream when he moved here to have a shir in his house, like he had in Mill Basin. So it's a tremendous zechus for us to really bring that kedusha and the learning in his home, and particularly this topic of chassidus, which I've heard from him that he didn't, he enjoyed the Poland trip, but he didn't know that much about the tzaddikim among many other people. As most of us here also, we learned a lot of chassidus over the years, but it's hard to fully appreciate it unless you know the context, the individuals, who they taught, who taught them. So that's the goal of this this series, to really understand what the shul was created about, and the idea of all the chassidus and how that developed and how it evolved. So looking around the room, no one here grew up as a chassid. Is that correct? Sheldon did, okay.
No way.
Fine. So maybe a few people know. You did? I thought you grew up on a farm. Chassidim on a farm? Okay. So, what?
Chav Yisrael
farm. Okay. So other than Sam and maybe Sheldon, who knows Yiddish very well, no one here grew up as a chassid. I didn't grow up as a chassid. Rav Weinberger did not grow up as a chassid. I remember the first... What?
I grew up in Barber.
If you didn't grow up in Chassid, you don't really know what it's like. I remember the first time I heard Rav Weinberger speak, I heard all about him, but the first time I heard him speak, I was so confused. He actually spoke the same Hebrew that we speak. I was expecting like E and U and everything mixed around. So clearly he didn't grow up as a Chassid either. So the goal of these shirim is, again, hopefully to understand who these tzaddikim are and where they came from, their background, where they lived, and who they influenced, and how they influence us in our generation. So the idea was, discussing this with Jeremy Fader, I figured I'd pick a tzaddik and discuss him 1, 2, 3 weeks at a time. I don't want to extend it too much, depending on who we're talking about, and give a little bit of background on how they became who they were, and introduce some of their svarim, just to get familiar with some svarim. Many of them, the pre-tzaddik has, Reb Tzadok has 10 svarim, just to get familiar with each of them. And when we hear these names being quoted, to have a full appreciation of who they were, where they came from, and what they've accomplished. And hopefully in our minds, we could develop this family tree of and a map and a big web of all the Hasidic dynasties to appreciate all these things going on. So I know, as I said, no one here grew up as a Hasid, but I imagine if you dig deep enough in your family history, I'm guessing your great-grandfather, if not maybe a little further, probably was a chassid of some sort. It's a fair guess. I know for me, my grandfather grew up as a chabad. He's a Lubavitch. He was Lubavitch. And when he was very young when his father passed away. I think he was 11 at the time. So then he started to go to a different shul and then to a different school, and he wasn't a chabad anymore. But growing up, when he always come for Yom Tov to my house, my parents' house, he always davened the machzor nusach ari. So he still held on to the nusach he davened, but that was pretty much it. And the war came, obviously, and whatever he would have kept, he lost all of that. But my family, we go back to Chabad. And in fact, I'll discuss this probably some other time. I have a set of Gemaras that my grandfather gave me that he got from his grandfather, going back to 1880 or so. So we all have some deep history within each of us. And again, I'm guessing somewhere along the way there is some chassidus in your blood, which is one of the reasons why you've probably been drawn towards the Kila, because the chassidus that we have here. So we're going to go back and trace back where we come from and understand where this chassidus, how it was really created. So Erev Shabbos, I speak to my parents every Erev Shabbos, and I don't like FaceTime. I don't have FaceTime on my phone, but my wife has FaceTime. I find FaceTime to be very awkward. It must be my generation. Looking around, you probably also find that to be the case. So, my parents like to see the kids, the grandkids, when they talk to them. So they go on FaceTime. And I always get very uncomfortable when I put myself in FaceTime talking to my parents. It's very strange. They look big, small. I can't figure it out. So my father says to me, last Shabbos, some person walked up to him and said, I really enjoyed the shir that your son gave on Chassidus. I don't know what shir he's talking about. Me, a Parsha shir. I was speaking about some Shemesh Shmuel or something. So he said he really enjoyed it. So my mom said, when did you become a Chassid? as I said to her, wait till you see your credit card when I buy that Bekasha and the Strimal. So then she comes last month to Shabbos for my Sim, and she sees this big poster that Rabbi Levin's giving a shir in Chassidus. She's like, really? So she's really getting worried. So the truth is, my first exposure, this is going to be a little bit of an introduction to my own entry into the world of Chassidus. Each of you have your own different take, but as also Chassidus is new to you. I probably won't speak too much about the Baal Shem Tov this week, but next week we'll speak more about the Baal Shem Tov and the week afterwards. But my first encounter with Eish Kodesh goes back around 20 years ago. So when I was growing up in Teaneck, so we never heard of a chassid, we never saw a chassid. If you saw a black cat in Teaneck, you only heard nasty things about that black hatter who came back from Eretz Yisrael. He has a long davening, he's shuckling, and how many averas did he do that he shuckled so much? So you saw a few black cats growing up in Teaneck, and only negative things. And whatever you heard about a chassid was extremely negative as well. I never saw a chassid. So who was the first chassid I saw? So firstly, happy birthday to Mikey Richmond. So sorry, but Mikey and I used to spend many Shabbats out here in Woodmere when we were in high school and even elementary school. And we go to a close friend of ours, Donnie Weischultz. We spend Shabbos at his house. And one Shabbos, Jake Weischultz decided to take us to a new minyan that started Friday night. So we were, I don't know which, 9th, 10th, 11th grade. So he took us to this house minyan. You all know what I'm talking about already. Noda Drive, right?
Road.
So we walked in this behind the stairs, I think, the basement. We walked down to the basement. And we sat in this basement shul. And we saw this individual sitting in front with his long coat. Never saw such a thing. And some fur on his head. Never saw that either. And they were singing Lechadodi, like we never saw it sung before. And five, six of us, other ones with us, was another person now who's a Rebbe in Ramaz. Another one's a Skad Mashkiach in Shalvim. So the five, six of us are sitting in the back, and we're just pretty much laughing at everything that we see. And then they start this clap, and then the double clap, and the clap, and the double clap. And we just started laughing more and more. So that was my first exposure to Chassidus and Eish Kodesh. And just ironic how everything really comes full circle. And now here I am giving a shir on Chassidus and not laughing anymore, but really enjoying the clapping and the singing and the dancing. So in addition to my upbringing in Teaneck of having being this anti-Chassidus in that community, I was also a big lover of the Vilna Gaon, the Gra. Those who don't know, I'm a math major. I worked as an actuary for a little bit. So I have a love for math. And naturally, if you're frum and you love math, so you find a tremendous connection to the Gra, who famously wrote a book on math, a math book he wrote. So I felt very connected to the Gra. And not knowing anything about Chassidus, I'm like, all I knew was that the Gra was very anti-Chassidim. So that put a further shield against Chassidus in my mind. I love the Gra. I grew up in Teaneck. And then they clap in a very silly way in the shul I went to in Woodmere. That's all I knew about Chassidus. So then I went to Eretz Yisrael. I learned in Akota for a year and a half. And there I had a chavrusa and my roommate as well, Binyamin Landa. Binyamin Landa, who's still learning in Eretz Yisrael now. He never left. You probably know his brother Brian, right? Brian's his name? Brian, okay. Brian's his older brother. So Binyamin, Scotty at the time, he's Binyamin now. He was my chavrusa and my roommate as well. We had a very nice time together. And then right after I left, it was January time, he bought me a gift before I went back to America. So he bought me a gift, and he says, you'll use this one day. I didn't know what it was he gave me, but I took it. I said, thank you. He bought me a set of Pritzadik. Now, what's ironic about that is twofold. If anyone knows who the Pritzadik is, we'll get to him. I don't know when. I don't have a schedule. We'll work on that schedule. Reb Tzadok was a person who was a big Litvak. He grew up as an anti-Chassid. And then he was pulled in and became a real chassid. So that was number one. But even more interestingly was Binyamin Landa is a Ben Acher Ben, a direct descendant of the Noda Behuda, Rabbi Yechezkel Landa, who, well, I'll explain in a second, was a big, big, big opponent of the chassidim. And so much so that he was very against L'Shem Yichud. When they created L'Shem Yichud, he was very against it as a whole tshuva. You can't say L'Shem Yichud. So when we were in yeshiva, Rabina, the Rosh Yeshiva, told Binyamin Landa that he cannot say L'Shem Yichud when he puts on tefillin and talis because his great-great-grandfather, the Noda Behuda, says you're not allowed to. So now Noda Behuda's great-great-great-grandson is giving me a pre-tzaddik. So the Noda Behuda, who was, as I said, very much against Hasidim, Rabbi Cheskel Landa, he married a cousin of the Baal Shem Tov. And he married the cousin of the Baal Shem Tov before the Baal Shem Tov became the Baal Shem Tov. We're going to get more next week of how he evolved in becoming the Baal Shem Tov. But no one knew who he was. At this period of his life, Baal Shem Tov was hidden. He was busy cleaning shuls and taking kids to school. He was not much of a Talmud Chacham. At least people didn't realize who he was. So he married the cousin of the Baal Shem Tov. This is Noda Behuda. And when the Baal Shem Tov became a big person, finally it was revealed who he was. So the Noda Behuda was very much against Hasidus. And his wife, Noda Behuda's wife, said to him, "You don't understand, my cousin, he's not Stam. He's something special. I'm going to tell you a story," she told him. "I was there when the Baal Shem Tov said the Or HaChaim HaKadosh was just Nifter in Eretz Yisrael." Now he was in Mezhbuz at the time, the Baal Shem Tov. And he had Ruach HaKodesh, that Or HaChaim HaKadosh just passed away in Eretz Yisrael, miles away. And I saw him tear Kriya when he had that Ruach HaKodesh. So, how are you going to explain that? So Noda Behuda says, okay, he's an interesting fellow. He has Ruach HaKodesh maybe, but he doesn't know Halacha. Because granted, fine, I'll grant you the fact, let's say he did have Ruach HaKodesh, and he knew that the Or HaChaim HaKodesh was Nifter. You're not allowed to tear Kriya because you can't use Ruach HaKodesh for a basis of Halacha. It's lo b'shamayim here. So if no one told him in this world that he died, he's not allowed to tear Kriya, and he violated Baal Tashchis. He tore his clothing, and he wasn't allowed to. That's an Issa D'Raisa. So he doesn't know Halacha. He might have Ruach HaKodesh, but what's Ruach HaKodesh without having known Halacha? So the Baal Shem, the wife of the Noda Behuda was understood the Noda Behuda's taina. So she goes back to tell her cousin, the Baal Shem Tov, what the Noda Behuda said about him, that he doesn't think you know Halacha. So you know what the Baal Shem Tov said? He explains to his cousin, the wife of the Noda Behuda, that it wasn't Ruach HaKodesh that I found out that the Or HaChaim HaKodesh died. I physically saw that the Or HaChaim HaKadosh died. Because Chazal tell us, and I should also point out, I'm not saying this story is true or not true, but many of the Hasidim say that you can't believe every story about the Baal Shem Tov. And if you do believe every story, you're crazy. But if you don't believe any of the stories, then you're not Bikoros. So every story you have to take with a grain of salt. So the Baal Shem Tov explained that there's this or, this light, this vision that Adam HaRishon had, that the Gemara tells us he was able to see across the entire world, from one end of the world to the next end. And after he ate from the Eitz Hadas, his vision was impaired. And he was only able to see only so far. But Chazal tells us there was that Or HaGanuz, that hidden light, the hidden vision, that was reserved for certain tzaddikim throughout the generations. And those who protect their eyes from looking at things that they shouldn't be looking at have the ability to see from one end of the world to the next. And so Baal Shem Tov explained, he actually physically saw the patir of the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, implying that the Noda Behuda did not have that ability. And that's what the Baal Shem Tov explained to his cousin, the wife of the Noda Behuda. Now one time, Rav Meir Shapiro, the founder of Daf Yomi, who himself was a Rebbe, was once asked the question, what's the difference between a chassid and a misnagid? So he thought about it a little bit, and he said, you know that Gemara that talks about how great Rabbi Yonasan ben Uziel was when he learned? Rabbi Yonasan ben Uziel was so great that when he learned, what happened? If a bird would fly over, it would be burned with fire. So he says, you know how a chassid learns that Gemara? He learns the Gemara and says, wow, Rabbi Yonasan ben Uziel, what a hasmada, what kavanas when he learns. To learn in such an Eish Kodesh like Rav Yonasan ben Uziel. Know what a Misnagid says when he learns that Gemara? Is he chayiv to pay for the bird or is he not chayiv to pay for the bird? Is he chayiv in mazik or not? So some of these stories we're going to be encountering by the Baal Shem Tov and others. So whether they're true or not true, it's supposed to connect in a certain way to us, to bring life to the Torah. So now, how did I get into Chassidus? Myself personally, what drew me into learning Chassidus? Now, I should let you know, it's somewhat new for me also. I'm not that much ahead of you guys. I just have more time during the day than you guys have. That's really it. But what drew me in is as follows. Now, as I started to learn more halacha, so you start seeing that the Arizal and the Zohar are quoted. Now, I was taught that Zohar, Kabbalah, Arizal, they're crazy. You can't learn these things. But then I started wondering, but a lot of the things that we do is based on the Arizal, based on the Zohar. So the Magen Avraham quotes the Arizal and the Zohar, as does the Mishneh Berurah and the Behetev. So I said, these Kabbalah is something that we actually accept. How could you deny it? People have asked me, how do you trust that the Zohar is really written by the Rashbi? It's a forgery. So I don't talk to people. I talk to them. I won't respond in such a conversation. If they don't want to believe in it, you're not going to convince them. So I started to see, and I knew that the Gra also, he learned Kabbalah, and he learned Kabbalah, and he wrote on Kabbalah. So I started to wonder, what is this Zohar? What is the Arizal that we quote so often that we're told not to really learn? So that I had in the back of my mind. I had no idea how to approach this. You could search on the internet and find really crumb things about Kabbalah and the Sfiras. I had no one to turn to really guide me in what is this world of Zohar and Kabbalah. So now we're going to fast forward a few years, which is now 3 years ago or so. So I was asked to give a Daf Yomi here in Esh Kodesh. And I would daven here once in a while Friday nights. I daven in the back row next to Spergel and Sklar Friday nights here and there. Enjoyed the davening. And then I was asked to give a Daf Yomi. Shimi Klein called me up. Rav Weinberg is going to YU to teach. So they need someone to do a Chabura and someone to give a Daf Yomi if I'm interested. So I said, sure. So I started giving Daf Yomi. We started with Pesachim. That was June, I think, we did Pesachim. That goes back 3 years ago almost. So I said, if I'm going to give a shir in the Akila, I may as well meet the Rav. So I scheduled a meeting with Weinberger. This is 3 years ago, again, the first time I ever met him. We sat down, and we had a very nice conversation. And then we're talking, and he's like to me, oh, you went to YU? You don't look like you went to YU. I said, me? You don't look like you went to YU. So we had this connection of both going to YU. And then I started asking about how can we see all the time. And I didn't know much about Rav Weinberger, what he knew, what he didn't know. Just knew he looked like a chassid, and people like the way he speaks. And people like to sing and dance when he's there. So I asked him about the Arizal and Sefer Kabbalah, what are these in Yanim that are often quoted. And he started to tell me about it. And he started giving me some reading material to learn and how to get involved. And started explaining how chassidus is really an entryway into Kabbalah. It's trying to cover up Kabbalah a little bit, but making it more accessible to the Hamonam. And that was our first conversation. And from there, we continued a wonderful relationship, of course. And that's why I'm here now giving a shiur in Chassidus, because of his influence. Now, I want to mention as well the conversation where Weimer and I have had many times about learning Chassidus and Nigla, Nister and Nigla. It's very, very important when you enter this world. Chassidus is a very light level of Nister, but it's in the world of Nister. It's a world of learning the secret of Torah in a very simplified way. Now, I can't stress enough how important it is that you have to learn more and balance that with learning Nigla, which means Gemara and Halach and everything else. A person's only learning Chassidus all day long, Kabbalah all day long, it's not going to turn out very pretty. And I can't tell you how many conversations I've had with people who are Rabbanim, who think Rav Weinberger knows nothing more than Chassidus. Because they never heard a shir. They heard a shir, and he gives a very nice shir. He tells you a story, he gives inspiration. And I have to convince them. And they're like, really? I said, yeah, you could talk to him about any sefer in any topic, in Halacha, in Lamdis, Rav Shimon Shkup, Rav Chaim, Rav Soloveitchik, Mishneh Berurah, Tshuvas, Minchas Yitzchak, whatever you want. But he doesn't let people know that when he gives a shir, he's here to inspire. And the reason why Rav Weinberger is so special is because he also has that foundation of tremendous amount of nigla, although people don't always see that side. If I could show you some of the texts that we have back and forth of Mar Makomos, of exact Mar Makomos, and response time in just a few seconds of exact page numbers and footnotes in both nigla and nister, you'd be floored. So learning nister or learning chassidus, which again is a very low level of nister, really has to come along with learning a tremendous amount of gemara and halacha. And we've had this conversation many times, how it does bother him that people learn chassidus all day long. And sometimes it creates people who are really not very grounded, as we all have seen. And he was very bothered that he heard people spend hours a day, even though they're learning Gemara, they spend a couple hours a day learning Rabbi Nachman or Rabbi Nosson or whatever other sefer it is, Tanya, for a couple hours a day as a yeshiva bacher. That's a half an hour a week, maybe, he said. That's like the dessert. But it has to be founded on nigla. So you have to have that balance. And Baal Shem Tov was no different. The Baal Shem Tov, we understand that he was really the one who created and started Chassidus. And people don't believe it, but he had a tremendous, tremendous foundation in learning Gemara and Halacha. And we're going to get to how he had a Shidduch. That's really based on what he, his knowledge he knew in Torah and Nigla, what really led to a Shidduch. So we'll get to that story probably next week is my guess. It's already 8:45. Wow. So when I discussed Motei Shabbos about at my siyum about dvash, how Torah is mesukin midvash, Torah is sweeter than honey. So Rav Weinberger mentioned to me privately that the way the Hasidim understand it, not that Torah is sweeter than honey. We discussed how dvash is really a symbolic of nister, Torah's nister. Dvash is the sweetness. When you get to the depths, the secret of Torah, that's dvash. So the way Hasidim understand the pasuk of mesukin midvash, the Torah is sweeter than honey, it's mesukin meidvash. It's sweet from the honey. The honey is what makes the Torah sweeter. So when you learn nigla, and you learn through Gemara and Halacha, and then you learn Rabbi Nosson, Rabbi Nachman, Baal Tanya, whatever you're learning, then the nigla comes to life. And you see the secrets that are hidden behind all the Halacha. But if you don't have, you have just the dvash, just the honey, but there's no backbone, then you don't really appreciate it. It's most appreciated as you balance the dvash, the sweetness of the chassidus, along with the Gemara learning. So in my own draw towards chassidus, what I've experienced in learning chassidus is twofold. And each of you, I'm not sure if everyone here is interested in chassidus or not, have they been drawn in just yet? But the main reason why people get drawn into chassidus is really because it allows you to feel the Shekhinah in this world. It really brings the Shekhinah down to this world. You really sense HaKadosh Baruch Hu who's there. And there's an amazing story. We'll get to who this is. Rav Tzvi Hirsch Zidushover. Rav Hirschela Zidushover. His father was very close with the Ketzos. Ketzos HaChoshim, we all know, on the Shulchan Aruch Hoshim Mishpat, was a Gaon, you can't imagine, an Eloi. If you want Lumdus, you learn the Ketzos. And the Ketzos was talking to the Rav Hirschela's father once. Rav Hirschela was describing to the Ketzos how his son, the father said, Rav Hirschela was such a Eloi in learning. So the Ketzos says, next time he stops by my city, I want him to come to my house, I'd like to talk to him. So the next time Rav Hirschela was in the city of the Ketzos, he knocks on the door. Ketzos welcomes him in and gets right to the point, as he always does. And the Ketzos says, I have a question for you. The Torah of the Baal Shem Tov is the same exact Torah as the Arizal who was before him. And it's the same exact Torah as the Rashbi of the Zohar. So if it's really true that Baal Shem Tov, what he did, he innovated something, that he created Chassidus. Chassidus didn't exist before the Baal Shem Tov. They learned Kabbalah, they learned Zohar, the Arizal, but they didn't create these Chassidim, followers around the Rebbe. So who's the Baal Shem Tov? Who did he think he is that he could create Chassidus if the Arizal and the Rashbi didn't do this either? So his response to the Ketzos was that Akol Asa Yafa Bi'ito. Everything has to be done in its right time. The Medrash asks, why wasn't Avram Avinu given the Torah? Why was it only given for Moshe Rabbeinu? The Chazal tell us that the world was broken up into 6,000 years, 2,000, 2,000, 2,000. The first 2,000 is Tov Avo, the next 2,000 is Torah, and the final 2,000 is Yemos HaMashiach. So the 2,000 of Torah, the middle 2,000, started with Avram Avinu in 1948, not of our 1948, but the 1948 of the years of the world, of the Jewish calendar. Avram came into the world, he recognized HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that was the beginning of 2,000 years of Torah. Not exactly 2,000, but approximately. So why wasn't Avram Avinu given the Torah? So the Medrash says, because HaKol Yafa, HaKol Asa Yafa Be'ito, everything has its right time. Moshe Beinu was the one who should have received the Torah, even though Avram was really great, it had to wait till Moshe Beinu's time. So it says the Zidush Shavar, that the same thing when it comes to, when it came to the Baal Shem Tov, it wasn't ready to become Chassidus yet. With the Rashbi, with the Arizal, it wasn't ready for it just yet until the Baal Shem Tov. HaKol Asa Yafa Be'ito, he had to wait for the right time. Now for some reason the Ketos wasn't very pleased with that response. So he wasn't done yet. He says, let me give you a mashal. A person came from a faraway country and tells a small village that there's this interesting bird that's face looks like a human being and its feet look like ox feet. And they say the guy's crazy. Then a second guy came from that same faraway country and says, the face doesn't look exactly like a human. It resembles a human being. And the feet are not exactly like an ox feet, but they resemble the feet of an ox. And then people believed him a little bit, but not exactly. It's still crazy. What kind of animal looks like a human slash ox bird? And then finally, the third guy came and actually brought the creature and showed them, this is the animal. And then there's no denying it anymore once you see the animal. So says Rav Hershula, when the Rashbi came and he learned in the caves, so then the Torah was hidden. It was like a bird with a human face and an ox. No one could believe it existed. It was so hidden. That Rizal came into this world and made it a little bit more accessible, but still in a very hidden way. The Baal Shem Tov brought the Shekhinah into this world. He showed you this creature, this bird with a human face, with the ox feet. He brought the Shekhinah, he brought this Chassidus, this Torah Nister into the world and brought really life to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, being everywhere you are. And the Covenanter Maggid said that when a person says Baruch Atah Hashem, should have in mind that you're speaking to the Shekhinah right in front of you. The Baal Shem that brought the Shekhinah into the world. Baruch Atah Hashem. This is you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's no longer this God is hidden away somewhere up in Shemaim in the Elyonim. He's here in everything that we do, in what we eat, in what we, where we sit and where we live. The Shekhinah is here. And that's what the Baal Shem Tov did. Now, unclear whether the Ketos accepted this or not. But that's the main idea of Chassidus, that it really brought the Shekhinah down into this world and made it filled with feeling and warmth. And the second idea of Chassidus, which is what drew me in initially, was I had the interest in learning Kabbalah. That was my interest. I wanted to know what the Arizal was, the more of an intellectual one for me. And that kind of brought me in to get a exposure to what these different spheres are. But those are the two elements of Chassidus, to my understanding. One, it brings the Shekhinah down and allows us to connect to the Shekhinah in a very emotional way. And then there's that intellectual level of understanding the Kadosh Baruch Hu in a much deeper way. There's a beautiful book, those who want to buy Chassidic Masters, Rav Arya Kaplan. He goes through the basic biographies, has a very nice introduction as well. I just want to read the last two paragraphs of his introduction here. It really brings to life the idea of Chassidus. And then I see we ran out of time already. I'll share one quick story connected to the Parsha. I want to connect to the Parsha each week if I can. And then we'll really go through further with the Baal Shem Tov next week. And he writes, this is Rav Arya Kaplan, that the success of Chassidism is evidenced by its present vitality, even after two world wars which almost decimated its leadership and ranks. The world Hasidic movement today numbers over 500,000. This is written, I don't know how many years ago. It's even more than that probably now. And is growing more rapidly than any other segment of Jewry. And beyond this, the teaching of Hasidism have found a place in the popular mind that assures them a permanent place in Jewish thought. And entering the realm of Hasidic literature is almost like entering a new world. A world where the spiritual is so palpable, one could almost reach out and touch it. Like we're saying, Baruch Atah Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Shekhinah is right there. He's sitting here, the Shekhinah is with us at the Shir tonight. He's mamish in reach. So I'll just finish off with one last story, with the Satmar Rav said, and we'll, as a, I guess, hakdama to the Baal Shem Tov a little bit more, that when Baal Shem Tov was born, when he's brought into this world, there was a big fight up in Shemayim. A big kitchering up in Shemayim that they shouldn't allow such a great tzaddik to come down to this world. And they're going back and forth. And then finally, they made an agreement up in Shemayim. And the agreement was as follows. This is the Satmar Rav speaking. That they were mefayis, the Satan, they appeased the Satan, that when they brought down this neshama of the Baal Shem Tov, Le'om Hazeh, they're also going to send down a terrible neshama from the Sitra Achra, from the dark side, if you will. And that Sitra Achra, says Satmar Rav, was Moses Mendelssohn, which was living in the same tikkun for the same time period as the Baal Shem Tov. And we'll see next week that the Baal Shem Tov came right after the stories of Shabtai Tzvi. But during that tikkufa of the Baal Shem Tov was the same tikkufa of this Moses Mendelssohn, what he accomplished terribly. And that was the fight in the world up in Shemayim to bring down this special neshama of the Baal Shem Tov. So in the bottom here, I don't know if this is the Satmar Rav speaking or the Mechaber of the Sefer. It's called Pardes Tzadikim. I just saw it recently. It's a Sefer that discusses an individual here, a Rav, went on a recent trip to Krakow, to Ukraine rather, Poland and Hungary. And he recorded some of the stories that he discussed on this trip. So in the footnote here, he says, this week's Parsha, that Sarah was very worried that when she becomes pregnant, everyone's going to make fun of her. Everyone's going to laugh that such an old lady is becoming pregnant. It's going to laugh at me. And Rashi explains, the Medrash is that many other barren women at that time were also given a bracha, and their tefillahs were all answered at that same time, and there's tremendous sachuk, which is understood as either laughter or joy in the world. That not only Sarah, was that tefillah of Sarah answered, that she was able to have a child, ultimately Yitzchak, but many other women who were at that time barren were zochah to have children. So what was the point in that? If they wanted to really create a nace to show that Sari Menu was so special, then only Sari Menu should have the nace, and no one else. That would have highlighted. But if thousands of ladies who were answered, their tefillahs were being answered, so they're going to say it was something they drank in the water, that something they drank that helped them all become pregnant. And if you just had Sari Menu, the only Akara, to have a child, that would have been a greater nace. So what does Rashi mean that many others were also zochah to have children at that time? So explains the same thing happened when Yitzchak Avinu was brought into this world. In the Elyonim, there was this big fight that you can't bring Yitzchak Avinu into this world, this great tzaddik. It can't be. The Yitzhar was fighting against it. And the way they appeased the Yitzhar up in Shemayim, however that works, is that we'll allow other ladies to become pregnant as well, and other Rishon to be born at that same time, at that same tkufa. So whenever a tzaddik is created in this world, it comes with, of course, the Sitra Achra, the dark side as well. So that's really introduction to my understanding, my perspective of how Hasidus has affected me as a Hakdama. And Mirta Hashem will continue next Thursday night. We'll really get involved in when the Baal Shem Tov was born, the context he lived, what he did, what he accomplished next week in Mirta Hashem.